Welcome to Believing the Bizarre,
where we dive into the unknown and the unusual,
and tell you whether or not we find it believable, except for today. Today, we're not talking about believability. This is bonus. You're like, wait a minute, it's Friday. It's been a minute.
I love Fridays.
It's been a minute since we've done a Friday episode.
It's been a while.
I think Baker? No, Patreon.
Patreon. It was a Patreon.
Dude, you know how happy I was to be able to fit Baker Mayfield in an episode, though?
Yes, I do.
But enough about Baker, even though I love him very much. Today, we are here joined by Josh from Haunting Season. Josh, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
We are so glad to have you on the show. Thank you for being receptive to a weird person in your inbox.
Them sliding in them DMs.
Yeah.
Face first. Losing that helmet on the slide.
Yep. Yeah.
No, I love it. I say this on like every show that I go on. I live for the interaction of it all. If there wasn't the outreach from other content creators and from people who are watching the content and commenting and all that stuff, I'd just be a guy in a room talking to a camera.
And we would be people just talking into mics and no one listening.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But you're right. You're right in concept. Like, I'm gonna stop before I get too existential. You're right.
I don't think you can. What's wrong with being too existential? All right, I apologize for anybody who thought there's anything paranormal. We're just gonna talk about the meaning of life for the next 30 minutes. Okay, so 42. This. Is what's going to go down, everybody, on this awesome bonus episode. So for those of you that are in our Patreon, you are familiar with the game Do You Believe the Bizarre that we play with producer Ben. But he's old and has kids, so, and he's putting them to sleep right now.
Yeah.
So he's not on. I don't even know if we actually asked him to be on. We love you, Ben.
Don't tell him.
Everybody
has Patreon.
He actually doesn't.
Yeah,
is our producer, and he creates stuff for Patreon, but I don't think he's ever listened to it. But he does listen to the main show, so let's all collectively just not tell him. But we are here with Josh, and what we're going to do is we're going to play this game with him. Basically, this is the way it works, because you know what we do on this podcast. We rate whether something is believable or it's unbelievable. We're going to kind of, like, what do you carve out the middle of?
A pumpkin?
Of? Yeah. Yes! And that's, I was thinking fruit, well, that's...
It's a vegetable.
Is it a vegetable?
I think so. It's like a squash, so yes.
Everybody spends all their time talking about tomatoes. They don't really talk about pumpkins.
It's a vegetable.
It's a gourd.
Yeah,
is it a gourd?
Yeah, it's a gourd.
What is that?
I don't know.
Isn't that what you
it's
do to
somewhere
yourself?
Somewhere in between.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. We need you around all the time when we don't know things. I'm just going to have you on my phone at all times on speaker, and if we stumble, just shout it out. But what I mean is we're carving out the viable and the skeptical. This is all or nothing, and Charlie and I are each going to give Josh two stories, one of which is true, one of which we made up, and he's going to tell us what he thinks is what. And we're also going to be throwing in some questions, talking about paranormal stuff, his podcast, his TikTok, his YouTuber. He has one hat on right now, but...
He wears many.
Emotionally, he wears many hats. Yeah. So, Josh, are you ready to begin this game? And he had no idea what this was going into today.
Oh,
so
yeah. I think he's still
no, I'm coming in cold. I'm coming in cold, and I'm so ready.
I believe everything. You might know some of these. We're not tricking you. You didn't do two believables, did you?
What?
You didn't do two believables in one
don't
round.
Answer
no,
that.
No,
I got gotcha. You.
Yeah, of course I mean, we'll see.
All right. First one, I'm going to kill someone later. Second one, Charlie's a ghost. No, just kidding. Do you want to go first or you go first?
You go first.
All right. This is round one. You ready, Josh?
Yeah.
Okay, so one of these is fake, one of these is real. The first story is called Sayonara Samara. Quote, in Davis, West Virginia, new homeowner Randy Tamerson bought a ranch-style house in June of 2020. It had multiple bedrooms, bathrooms, a nice deck, and even a well in the backyard. Coal mines stayed open during the coronavirus pandemic, so Randy was able to consistently make money and buy himself a nice house. All according to plan. What wasn't according to his plan was the absolute fright he experienced during the first week of heavy rainfall. During August of 2020, West Virginia was pounded with so much rain that his well started to flood. While sitting on his deck and enjoying a nice cigar, Randy told the Logan Banner, a local newspaper, quote, double quote, "I was just sitting there, minding my own, when I saw what looked like a girl reaching over and climbing out of the well. Just like that Rings movie. Almost gave myself a heart attack," unquote. In reference to the 2002 horror film The Ring, it was not Samara that had plagued him for those 7 days of rain, but instead a dead body that had been placed in the well. The immense rain caused the body to float and spill arms forward over the edge of the well, giving Randy the appearance of a Night of the Living Dead style zombie return. Randy immediately reported the dead body to the Davis Police Department, and as of this time, the Davis Sheriff has no current suspects, including Randy, and the body's personal information has not been publicly released. That's one.
So, moral of the story, if you're going to send a body down a well, tie it to a cinder block.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Or pop the lungs.
Yeah, sleep with the...
pop
sleep
the with lungs,
the... Was that the wrong thing to say?
I've never heard that.
Oh.
Wow.
We're giving serial killers ideas here. They're I'm gonna jot that down. There's two of those, right?
Pop the lungs needs to be a, I don't know, like a Autopsy of Jane Doe Part 2, you know, like tagline, like pop the lungs.
That movie was really freaky.
Yeah, I love that movie. So good.
It sounds like a singer thing that they would say, like, remember, stick out your chest, pop the lungs.
Yes.
Use the diaphragm.
Pop the lungs.
And we're over here mumbling. All right. So the second story of round one, this one is called You Musk Believe in Ghosts. While TikTok is a fantastic place for teens and young adults alike to go viral, sometimes it's for unexpected reasons. One TikTok user uploaded a video of a Tesla car driving slowly through a graveyard. What was meant to be a spooky cemetery journey soon turned into horror as the Tesla's advanced sensors and large dash screen picked up a human body near the car that the riders simply could not see. In the clip, the driver has a camera pointed at the interior dash screen that detects and displays objects that the car could potentially collide with on autopilot. Usually, it shows pedestrians and animals, but in this case, it's very likely that it could have captured concrete proof of ghosts. It's safe to say that Teslas have certainly become the most expensive gadget for ghost hunters. And though, so that's round one.
Okay. And only one of those is true?
Only one of those is true.
Because I was really convinced it was the first one, but I swear I've seen that video on TikTok of the second one. Oh, man. I really wanted the first one to be true, but I think it's the second one.
Is that what you're locking in?
Yeah.
You're correct. The West Virginia one is fake.
Yeah, I knew that.
That was well written, especially with the news articles and all that.
Yeah, I stole that from my producer Ben. The more you can kind of fill in those fake details, you know, the more. But so you saw the video then? Isn't that crazy?
I saw the video.
Crazy.
Yeah, it reminds me of some ghost hunters started using the, I think it was called like Kinetic or something.
Yeah, for the Xbox. Yeah.
I've seen those hacked to show, you know, a dead person in a empty rocking chair or something.
Don't they use that in Paranormal Activity?
Yeah, in one of those ones.
Yeah, it's like the fourth or one or something.
Yeah.
Who would have thought everybody bought it to like work out and do tennis and then they got lazy and they're like, I'm not using that. And now I just use it to capture ghosts.
The raft thing was the big thing with the Kinect.
Was that what it was?
Yeah.
I just knew there was like the Just Dance for Wii, but it was like, it's Microsoft Kinect Just Dance.
Yeah, it's not the same.
But not Just Dance. All right, so let's get a question in before I go into round two. What is your favorite horror movie of all time? Go.
Oh, man, of all time. I always come back to, it's a battle, but I think the one that always wins is The Thing, the 1977 John Carpenter version.
I've never seen that one.
We could talk about also, a lot of movies you haven't seen.
Also not entirely confident it was 77, but the 70s version. Yeah, that it holds up as a very scary film because it has the most incredible practical effects. Just to Charlie, give you a little bit of a sample. There is a scene where there's a body. It's been taken over by this host of this alien they find in the ice. As they're trying to shock it back to life with the, you know, the paddles, this thing. You can see my hands doing
defibrillator.
It. Defibrillator. Defibrillator. The chest opens up as a mouth, and the rib cage bites off the arms of the guy, and then the head of the body falls off, grows spider legs, and runs across the floor. Like,
huh.
It is so imaginative and so well done. And because it's practical effects, it's only more charming today. You know, because bad CGI is never charming. But bad practical effects, just like they grow on your heart. So it's like deeply scary. It's people in Antarctica.
It's really cold too. Not only is scary stuff happening, they're also very uncomfortable.
Yeah. And it's this whole idea, talking about existentialism, of like, you can't really trust the person next to you because they might have the thing inside of them. They could be infected.
Don't be looking at me like that, bro. Well, that's like the invasion of the body snatchers. I think it's not like a whodunit, but I love when you don't know who to trust in a movie or any type of entertainment or art. I just think it's so much fun. My favorite Twilight Zone is like that, where they're all at the bar and it's like they think one alien is amongst them, and it's the dude from Boston with the forearms, but then the guy lifts his hat and he's got the third eye.
Yeah.
You've seen it. Uh-huh. I think it's not that scary.
No. I like the one with all toys.
You ready for round two?
Yes. All right. So, only one's true. Louis and Caesar were diving off the islands of Portolix and Xavier on the 24th of August when they found 8 coins. Before further, divers by archaeologists returned with another 45 coins. According to the press and the University of Alexandria on Tuesday, scientists from the university's Institute of Archaeology and History analyzed the perfectly preserved coins, dating them between the 4th and 5th century. The coins were in such good condition, the inscriptions were legible, allowing the team to identify coins from the region of the Roman Empire. Alongside the coins, divers found 3 copper nails and remnants of lead. It's very significant, a spokesperson from the university said on CNN. The coins were likely hidden by a wealthy local landowner who wanted to protect some of their money from barbarians. We are in the presence of a fantastic archaeological document from the time in which the case of the aliens. I want to say aliens. The time in the case the aliens arrived, said the representative from the university. And that's basically the story, that they discovered lots of Roman coins, which I think is very interesting and telling of me, because I like history.
You're pretty much saying you wrote it. But
I mean, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that finding a lot of Roman coins.
Yeah, I chose it, and it's real because...
Now, here is the other story.
He's like, oh, here's the real one.
This one's from BBC. The other one was from CNN. There are what appears to be remnants of a civilization on Mars. According to BBC, the Mars rover recently went over the polar north of the Red Planet. According to Barry Allen, who is one of the video feed operators at NASA, he said, it just went to this big valley we had not explored yet, and there it was. He was referring to a huge, hollow red stone temple and smaller red stone houses. Most of the structures appear to be collapsed or caved in, but scientists are baffled at seeing similar shaped buildings on what they would have seen on Earth. Barry again said, we were shocked. It looked like the Pantheon. Little windows and everything. And even a light shining through the ceiling. Scientists don't really think that these structures were made by aliens. But the resemblance is uncanny.
I know the answer because you read you showed me the one you wrote the other day.
I mean, again, I want it to be the second one, but I think the first one's the true one.
You know, why?
Old coins.
Why?
Old coins from Rome. Old coins from Rome. I could believe that more than little huts on Mars. Yeah.
Stop being so logical.
Was he correct, Charlie?
He's correct. Of course he's correct. Of course I made that up. That's so stupid.
I'm good at this. No, it's not stupid. No, it was done well enough that I was like, well, you know, I was like playing all the parts in my head of like, well, okay, so, you know, there's not necessarily buildings. Like, there could be holes from, like, meteors going through, and maybe it was, like, a hollow structure from, like, a volcanic eruption or something, and it just, you know. Like, it was vague enough that I could – it was detailed enough that I could paint the image with my mind, which made it feel real, and vague enough that, you know, especially with the last line, you know, scientists don't really think it's buildings, but it's kind of cool.
It's crazy.
You know, like, that's exactly how that article would end.
You gave me more credence than my wife did when I read her that story.
She said, that's bullshit.
She said, you're stupid.
You're dumb.
Thank you. I love you.
Dude, CNN doesn't talk about coins, man.
You almost got me. You almost got me.
So my question for you is, what made you want to jump on TikTok? Because you do such a really cool job and such an interesting thing on TikTok. What made you want to drive into that platform?
I don't know. It's this really weird thing because my preferred platform is YouTube. I write my own scary stories. They're usually 15 to 20 minutes long. I've been trying to get better at like shortening them. But the idea of doing 1 minute content still is super daunting to me. And my wife was on TikTok, and to me, it was like this annoying thing over there making the sound, you know, and I just assumed, like I think a lot of us did, that it's just teenagers doing dances. And while it might have started that way, it's now this like massive platform with all these little rabbit holes you can go down. And I started my own. And at first I started an analog photography one because that was the project I was working on over the pandemic. As I was walking around my neighborhood, I was making little vlogs and I was posting them with the images that I took for that day. And it was just like my way of doing something active, keeping my skills up. No one was watching those except for me and maybe my mom. And so then I got this idea, you know, like, well, maybe I should try and use that platform to get people over to my podcast and my YouTube show. So I started toying around with it, and it took months of like meetings at work and all of us being like, I don't understand this platform. Like, how do we take advantage of a platform that we know nothing about and we're not young enough to know anything about? But then I started seeing people my age on there and people older than me on there making great content. And so I just started experimenting, and eventually I found my formula of like, okay, I like to talk about scary movies. This is my opportunity to do it. I don't get to do it too much on my show because I'm writing my own content. So now I can enjoy this totally separate thing on TikTok, which made it easier because at first I thought I had to just do a 1 minute version of my 20 minute show. But I realized that doesn't matter. If people want to listen to me more, they can go find my longer content. But TikTok's like its own thing. And so I'm doing totally its own thing on there.
Yeah, I think that's really brilliant. Yeah, I think that's really brilliant what you've done.
Yeah, reusing material is great. But it also, to play to the strengths of the platform you're on, is if you have the time, definitely the right way to go about it, which we have not done on TikTok. And if you could speak to this, because I think it's pretty powerful, because people can create a TikTok video with their phone in 2 minutes if they choose to. And some of those videos are great, and I love them, those videos, and that's not a knock against it. But speak to like some of the production level that goes into and the time commitment that goes into creating these TikToks, because I think not enough people talk about that.
Yeah, well, I think the people who are able to make the content with their phone have a different personality than I do. I'm more of an introvert. I am someone who likes to be prepared. And when plans change, that can often set off anxiety in myself. I have a lot of social anxiety. So if the plan is to go to this bar for this amount of time, and at the end of that time, everybody wants to go to another bar, I can spiral out of control. No one might see it, but on the inside, I'm panicking. And so I have kind of a similar way with, you know, like I write my stories on YouTube and I spend 2 weeks writing them. I put them through a revision process like any other author would. And then I record them and then I edit them and I add music and I add sound effects. And so by the end of the process, it's very polished and it's something that I've had my eyes on the entire time. I'm in complete control of it. That's not to say I don't collaborate. I do have an editor and I allow her to express herself creatively based on what I've done. And that all works for me. But I like having the final say. And so when it came to TikTok, I tried doing the just hold your cell phone up and talk, but I will do 20, 30 takes and come away with it with nothing more than a panic attack. So what I do is I script my content. I write out when I watch a movie, I write my review, I write it pretty stream of consciousness. And then I go back and look at it and think, okay, how do I, you know, crunch this down to a minute? And then can I make it loop? Because that's one of my favorite things to do, is when it just loops right
seamless
back into its own content. And you're like, how am I watching
that
this again?
I noticed that. You really do make it a seamless transition.
That's my favorite little magic trick. And so when I get it right, and I have enough of them. I'll do like 18 at a time, and I've got a stack of shirts that I wear in my office. I'll turn on all the lights the correct way. I have a nice camera with a filter on it that will bloom the lights and make it look a little more like, I'm a huge sci-fi fan, so I want everything I do to look like Blade Runner. So I have, you know, like the neon lights, and I have thing that'll make it bloom. And then I've got a teleprompter hooked up to that. I've got my podcast mic hooked up to my computer, recording separate audio from the camera. And I do 3 takes per TikTok. And then I change my shirt. And then I do 3 takes of the next one. And I do that for 18 videos. And then I put them in the computer. I sync up the audio. I edit every single time I breathe out of my videos. And then I cover up 80% of it with footage from the movies. So it's hours and hours and hours of work for just one video, but I'm getting better at it, and I'm letting go more to where it doesn't. I started out wanting every single thing to be perfect, but not everything you put up on TikTok gets all the views. You know, like,
yeah,
you may get 500 views one day and 4 million the next. It's just really gambling.
Yeah.
So I've learned to like let go and kind of shorten that process and shorten my anxiety around it, and just being like, yeah, fine, good enough.
The batch recording is a really smart idea, by the way.
It's the only way I would be able to. I would spend all day every day making a single TikTok every day of my life, because I want to post 7 days a week. And I don't have, like, you know, if I miss a day, I'm like, well, you know, could have posted, but I didn't. Because there's like a window, too, where I think where it's like prime time, you know, like you have the best chance of the video taking off. And that's what you're always doing, is rolling the crap dice, mm-hmm.
Rolling craps.
And, and hoping for snake eyes, right? And like, maybe you get it and maybe you don't. I don't know how craps works.
I was in Guys and Dolls 11 years ago.
I think you want a 7, I think.
Yeah.
That's, I just think it's good for people to see kind of behind the scenes about it. Because there's a whole new, because I thought about TikTok the same exact way you did. It's like, oh, what is this? They're stupid videos. They're just miming. They're singing along. But then when you really do see how much time and effort people put into these videos, I think there is a whole new level of appreciation that can be had. Same with any platform.
Yeah. Yeah. And the level of creativity that I see on TikTok is unrivaled by anything I've ever seen online. I mean, I see stuff on that app that day after day after day, I'm just like, people are brilliant. People are amazing.
They're really funny. Really funny.
Yeah, I used to have to search on YouTube like epic win compilation and like watch a 15-minute video of people like almost dying, but they don't, to feel like people are awesome. And now I just have to open up this app. And it's like every day. People are amazing.
Yeah. You just open it up. It's like, hey, Josh, hope you're not at work or somewhere you should be quiet. Look at this video. Isn't this awesome? All right, on to the next one. Are you in the bathroom? Everybody knows what you're doing.
Yeah. I would say that's the one downside is the like, I love that everyone uses the same sounds and there's like trends, but like they get to a certain point where it's just like, yes, I know, you know, same fucking dance, same fucking song, different face.
All right. Intermission is over. Back to the game. Do you believe the bizarre? Are you ready, Josh?
I am ready.
All right. Story number one for round 3. This one is called Blood Splatter Bungalow. A popular urban legend and real mystery in Kutztown, PA, is that of the Blood Splatter House. Reports and urban legends say that the house was home to a young, happy couple in the 1940s. The husband was away at work most of the time, while the wife stayed at home, kept things clean, and cooked dinner for her and her husband, which she was happy to do until she started suspecting her husband of having an affair. One night, her husband came home drunk with another woman's lipstick on his face. She had stayed up, sitting quietly in the living room, waiting to catch her husband. She pled her case, demanding him to admit to his lack of faithfulness, to which he brushed her off and told her to leave him alone and he was going to go lie down. And she agreed that he was going to go lie down forever. And in an instant, she brandished a dagger and sliced his throat, splattering blood all across the living room wall. Fast forward to now, and this urban legend rings true for this particular home, because no matter how many coats of paint residents have attempted to use, all the varying colors and shades, it doesn't matter, the red splattering always reemerges.
Oh, I love that one.
And the second story of round 3, this one is called Freeing Emily.
Oh no.
A British man has made a bizarre discovery inside the walls of the home he just purchased in Surrey, England. When Jonathan Lewis got the keys, he decided to take a look around his new house. However, he made a disturbing discovery after breaking down some of the plaster wall that had been put up to cover the void under the stairs to the second level, according to the Daily Mail. Quote, "There was a wire coming out of there where the previous owners had kept the fridge, but I didn't know where the wire was plugged in, so I knocked through there a bit on the plasterboard to see what was in there," Mr. Lewis said. "I knocked through a hole about the size of a fist, shone a light in, and there was just a doll sitting there." Quote, "The rag doll was sitting in a miniature chair alongside a note which read, quote, Dear reader, new homeowner, thank you for freeing me. My name is Emily. My original owners lived in this house in 1961. I didn't like them, so they had to go. All they did was sing and be merry. It was sickening. Stabbing was my choice of death for them, so I hope you have knives. Hope you sleep well."
Oh, no.
I don't want either of them to be true.
One of these is true.
Oh,
and man. I just want to really. I'll say it afterwards. Go ahead.
I really thought the second one was going Stir of Echoes.
You know, like Kevin Bacon.
Find the kid in the wall, and then her spirit is free. But no. You don't want to free Emily. Leave her in the wall. Damn it. We have found so many things in our walls. We have an unfinished attic, my parents, and we found like old newspaper articles and like bird skeletons and baseball bats and like weird stuff. So that
didn't,
one.
Not to interrupt you, but didn't Eddie, our guy who helps with graphic designs, he found something creepy in a wall, didn't he? Like a child's play set?
Oh, it was like a little dugout crawl space.
But there was stuff in there.
Yeah, it was a kid's
place. Let's start hiding creepy stuff in our walls, just for whoever.
I think we all should. Or the floorboards, because there will come a moment when someone finds it. That's such a messed up note to leave. So I want to say, They're both definitely supernatural. They both have unbelievable aspects to them. I want to say the first one's true. And the only reason I'm saying that, even though it's, I think, the more unbelievable, is that I think that the real version of whatever the second story is wouldn't have had the "I'll stab you with knives because I stabbed the original owners." Like, for me, at that point in the story, I was like, oh, okay, so this is a story. You know, if it had just been like, I was left here by my last family, I love you, you know, something like that, it would have been creepy, but then it would have, like, stopped before the movie writing part of me. I don't know. So that's,
like,
that's
I
my
hope,
thinking.
I hope you take care of me better than they did, and that's it.
Yeah.
Dude, honestly, for the first time we stumped you, the little doll one is true.
Ew! No!
Yeah.
Dude. I had no idea.
I think it's a prank. I have to think it's just a prank. But yeah, the blood splatter one's fake. A crazy thing, though.
Lived there first.
So one of our listeners, Katie, if you're listening, sup, Katie, she actually messaged us the news article last night to this story, and I had this planned for a week and a half. And so I was normally, when somebody shares something that interesting, I'll at least put it on Instagram stories or something. But I was like, I can't mention this, and I'll tell you why. But like, it was crazy that. And then I was afraid. I was like, oh, he probably saw it then too, if it's making its rounds now. But that would be terrifying, even if it is a prank. What a creepy thing to find in your home.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I wish it was me. I wish I found it.
So, next in between rounds question for you. Okay. Do you have, and if so, give us the juiciest creepy paranormal experience that you have? That's what the people really want. They've just been hitting 15 second forwards to get to this point. They don't care about TikTok.
Like, stop reading. I want to hear the conversation. So, I think probably the best story that I have. Oh, man. I've got a handful, and some of them are on my YouTube channel, but this one is not. I've used elements of it. I've talked about it on different podcasts before, but this is like my most cherished moment. Ghost hunting with this group in Minnesota called Ghost Stories, Inc. And I met them on Twitter, and they were like, come ghost hunting in Minnesota. And I was like, I got a cousin there. Why not? So I started going with them and filming documentary footage just to see what would happen, and because it's super fun. And so this is towards the end of our time together. We did like a year and a half, and they took me to this poor farm in somewhere in Minnesota. And if you're not familiar, poor farm is basically the government would take poor people back in the day and put them on a farm and be like, as long as you work, we'll feed you. And that's like what we did with poor people. Now we just let them live in California under the
that's much nicer than I thought it was. Out.
Yeah. So, and the living conditions were really poor. And, you know, because we don't do a good job in this country of taking care of people who need help. And so a lot of people would die there. And so this particular poor farm has had unmarked graves that are now numbered out in the woods, because that basically when someone would die, they'd just haul them off in a wheelbarrow and bury them out in the woods. And so there are like hundreds of bodies out there. And we show up and we do this like tour with the woman who owns the building. It's now like a hotel many, many, many years later. And there are stories of we never went anywhere where there was like something horrible that happened. You obviously dying in a poor home and being buried out in the woods. But, you know, we never would go to an axe murder house because we don't want to be around like demonic stuff. We don't want to put ourselves
in danger. I totally
get
that.
Danger. So we thought like this will be really interesting. It's probably very spiritually active. And a couple of members of the group had very emotional responses almost immediately, feeling overwhelmed. And throughout the course of the night, it just was very active, not in a way of like capturing it on documentary film, but in personal experiences. And so one group came up from the basement with their tape recorder and they said, you got to listen to this. And they play it back and you could hear almost like the mouth on the microphone, Timothy. Like that. Like you could hear the spit in the lips of the person's mouth next to the thing. And we were like, whoa, what happened? What is it? We listened to it like 10, 15 times. And we're just like, it's absolutely Timothy. And they were like, we were sitting in the basement, which is this stone basement. And we had the microphone in the middle of the room on the floor. And we were, you know, messing with flashlights. There, you know, all this stuff that we do, ghost hunter stuff. And,
Tesla's.
And they were listening back to the session and they heard that name Timothy. So they're like, let's all go down there. And so we go down there, the whole group, and we're sitting there. We got the tape recorder in the middle and we got all our ghost hunting stuff all around. And we were like, Timothy, are you there? Nobody's feeling anything. It just feels like a room. And the people who were down there before were like explaining, like, these are our friends. These are our friends who are like also, you know, here to meet you and don't be afraid and like all this stuff. And I don't know, like 10, 15 minutes goes by. Just like nothing's happening. I don't know. Like maybe it's unexplainable. Maybe we're all just tired. And then all of a sudden, as a group, we feel the temperature drop like 20 degrees. Like it went from being pretty comfortable to being absolutely bone chillingly freezing. And at that point, the flashlights started responding immediately to yes and no questions. They would turn on and we would say, okay, turn them back off. You know, and they would go off. And these are three flashlights at the same time. Sometimes only two, but for the most part, all three. And we sat there and asked questions for like almost an hour, getting these responses to yes and no questions. And we figured out, it's been so long now, but we figured out that he was a boy named Timothy. He was not born there. He did die there. He never knew his father. His mother lived there with him and she died and was buried out in the graveyard and some more details like that. And it just felt, it felt like talking to someone who was a mute, you know, and like had found another way to communicate, like sign language or something. But this one was, you know, through flashlights. I don't know how else to explain it, but like that feeling of the temperature dropping so dramatically in such a short period of time and having everyone in the room at the same time go, oh, you know, it's a very bizarre feeling. It was winter. We were in a basement made of stone. With a stone floor, but you know, that should be pretty consistent.
Or at least not that drastic that quickly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you can't live the rest of your life not believing in ghosts now. You know what I mean? Like the choice was made for you, even if you didn't want to make it yourself.
Yes. And the reason I came back so many times was because my very first ghost hunt with them, I had spent all night and it was 3 o'clock in the morning and I was very skeptical and just, you know, and so is everybody in the group because they're not there to prove ghosts exist. They're there for the opposite, to be like, we can figure out the science behind why we have these feelings. And I got this feeling at 3 o'clock in the morning-ish to go into this back kitchen. And when I walked in there, it felt like pins and needles all over my body, like when your arm falls asleep, but from the top of my head to the tip of my toes, swirling around me like I was inside of a Coke can. And I told them, and I started going like, woo, woo, you know, and like shaking my hands. And they were like, whoa, what's happening? And I was explaining, and they were like, tell them to like give you a sign or something and like put your arms out and show them that you're not like a threat. And so it was like, if you're here, give me a sign, and I felt very firmly on my back. Two hands pushed me forward, and I lost my footing and stepped forward, and everyone saw it. And I was like, I think I was just pushed. And that was my first experience ghost hunting, and that's what got me to keep coming back. And so I feel like as time went on, and as I started to believe in this stuff more and more, with all these different small experiences with like weird radio signals and flashlights and, you know, hearing a sound here or there and all that, that it all accumulated to me just believing in ghosts.
Wow.
I mean, I'll be lying if I say when we get a listener submission on the podcast, I don't love when it's extraordinary and all these amazing, unbelievable, but you believe it, things happen. But there's just something so grounding and believable about these experiences. Because yours, I can't speak for you. They're not quite as intense as yours.
No way.
But there's still like that, like, it wouldn't make a good Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
But you're still sucked into the story and you believe it and you're there and it's just like, you're still on the edge of your seat. Like, I, even though they might not make the best entertainment, I love hearing stories exactly like that. It's just, yeah. Oh.
Wow. Well, shit.
Well, one of those stories was true, and one of
them. that would be really good. If you would be able to prepare that on the fly.
Yeah. All right. Oh boy.
So well, round four times.
Those are good stories. This first story is called Man Punches Nurse in the Face Multiple Times After His Wife Is Vaccinated for COVID.
That's a Panic at the Disco title right there.
It sounds like it. On Monday, around 9:15 AM, a man walked into the Burnt Pharmacy in Sherbank, a city in southern Quebec, and accused a nurse in her 40s, who police have not named, of vaccinating his wife. Sherbrooke Police spokesman Martin Carrier told CNN, "Right at the beginning, the suspect was very angry, very aggressive. He asked the nurse why he vaccinated his wife without approval, without his consent." Carrier said, "And he punched her right in the face multiple times, so the nurse didn't have time to defend or explain herself. And she fell to the ground, and the suspect left, running out of the drugstore. There are no laws in Canada that say individuals need their spouse's permission to get vaccinated, and it is unclear if his wife had given consent. The nurse was taken to the nearby hospital by an ambulance, where she was treated for her multiple injuries to the face," he said. Canada has vaccinated 69.8% of the population, surpassing the U.S. by 15.6%, according to the data from our World and Data Scene. Although most Canadians have welcomed public health measures, and the country has one of the highest vaccination rates worldwide, case counts and hospitalizations are on the rise, according to public health. Police do not have the name or photo of the suspect or security footage of the incident. Kira said they do, however, have a description of the man, and they're hoping for the public's help. The suspect is described as 30 to 45 years old, 6 feet tall, medium build, with darker skin, short brown hair, thick eyebrows, two smaller ear piercings on each ear, and a tattoo.
Tattoo of what?
They didn't say the tattoo. You fill in the blanks.
Nope. And a tattoo.
Okay.
It's on his hand. On his hand.
Oh, on his hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's the first story. Right in her face.
Yeah. The nurse saw the tattoo in a flash.
Oh, up close, man. And personal.
This one's from MSN. Orange Beach, California father stabbed 666 times by his 19-year-old son. Raymond Scortinucci was killed early on Thursday morning by his son, John Scortinucci. John Scortinucci was arrested approximately 3:45 a.m. Thursday, covered in his father's blood and screaming that the beast has cleared. Reports from the scene are that of a red candle stuck to the floor and pentagrams carved into the hardwood floors. The phone call came to 911 from John himself at 3:11 a.m. Reggie McDonald, the 911 operator that took the call, said that he ranted about how he needed to save his father from the evil inside. Reggie also reported hearing static on the call and a low voice in the background that was excited and cheerful. He said it even chuckled. Officer Stacy Ann Smith reported John Scantinucci to be surprisingly strong for a teenager. His eyes also seemed to be clouded, says Smith. She also reported to hear low voices when entering the residence. Police are still looking for an accomplice in the murder. Scantinucci is being held.
Oof.
Okay. You've made this one very difficult for reasons you probably don't realize. So I mean, because Orange County is like the Florida of California. And so even though that one has the most absurd details, every Canadian I've ever met has been really nice. So I'm leaning towards that one being true, even though the amount of stab wounds sounds like a really difficult task to accomplish. That's a large number of stab wounds to not even just physically be able to accomplish yourself, but to count at the coroner's office.
No, you'd be like
that's like beef, when you're right? looking for clothes on the top shelf. Your arm gets tired after a while. Yeah. Maybe you took a break around 350 or something.
Yeah, I've got 10 stabs in me max, maybe 11. Eyes being cloudy, 3:11 in the morning. And yet, because of my love of Canada and because of how awful Orange County has been throughout all of COVID with the anti-maskers and all that stuff, still leaning towards that one being true. But it doesn't seem like the logical choice. So I'm going to go with Canada. I'm going to say the Canada story was true.
The Canada story was true.
Okay.
I know. I made a little outrageous.
And yes, there are people. I have friends who live in Orange County who are not the type of people that I'm talking about. I just know.
They're like, no, we almost believe it happened there too.
Yeah. You know, there are evil people everywhere, blah, blah, blah. Wear a mask. I don't know. But don't punch nurses
in the face.
Was it during Nurse Week?
Yeah. Man. Well, yeah.
So you won. You got 3 out of 4 right.
Hey, that's great.
We already sent you a shirt.
Yeah, you get a shirt. Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, nice. I'll check my P.O. box after we get off the phone.
There you go. So, Josh, man, we appreciate you coming on our podcast. We appreciate you having us on your podcast
as well.
Both were a ton of fun.
And, you know, before we get off the call, why don't you tell everyone where they can listen to Haunting Season?
Yeah, I've done a really good, like you said on my show, Tyler, done a really good job of making everything just Haunting Season. So I'm Haunting Season on TikTok, Haunting Season on YouTube, I'm Haunting Season on podcasts, I'm Haunting Season all over the place. I'm on Slasher. I'm on Letterboxd. I don't know. I just try and get on all this stuff. But the big ones, the big three, are the I do daily horror content on TikTok, usually 1 minute long, sometimes up to 3 minutes, depending on if I'm feeling sassy. YouTube, I've got my original Scary Stories, and the podcast are the Scary Stories, but also continuing the conversation, full hour-long content every week.
I think the branding's important. It's kind of a joke where it's like, if you just search our name, you'll find us. But I think it is important to really hone in on that. So let me ask you this.
Yeah, I want to make it easy to find.
For sure. If you had to recommend one episode, like somebody, like they're like, Josh, I'm going to give you one chance. What episode or YouTube video? I'll leave TikTok out because that's, you know, 60 seconds. But what one episode or show would you recommend them checking out?
I actually think, so on the date of recording this is Thursday, September 23rd. So on the 24th, I'm putting out tomorrow what I think is my best work. It's called Molly's Midnight Massacre. And it is I think I really accomplished a good balance between humor and horror. I think there's something for everyone to enjoy. My editor, Colby, did a like above and beyond audio design for this one with incredible music. And when you're like inside the coffee shop, the music changes to like being over the speakers. It's gory, but it's also funny. So, you know, you don't get caught up too much in like the disgustingness. Some of my stories can be kind of gross. We were talking about The Thing. I tried writing a story like that. But yeah, this one's just kind of like an all around, like, I don't know, it's like something you would put on as a family during Halloween. It would be like a little too intense for mom, but not intense enough for like the 17-year-old goth kid, you know, yeah. Like it's perfect kind of for everybody to enjoy together.
Awesome. And seriously, everybody, Josh is awesome. Haunting mm-hmm. Season's awesome. So I really do implore you to check it out.
Yeah,
I
think you'll have this chance to do this.
You'll hit the subscribe for sure. So Josh, thank you so much for coming on. As always, this is Believing the Bizarre.
Podcasts as bizarre as you are.
As always, this is Believing the Bizarre. A podcast.
Well, I was including his as well.
Podcasts, then.
Podcast.
Or just what? Just don't say say just podcasts.
Podcasts. As bizarre as you are. Yeah, there we go. We got it.
I talked over it, but you can cut it out.
podcasts, as bizarre as you are.
You're not saying with any conviction. This
oh my god.
The end.
Podcasts, as bizarre as you are. That felt phoned in.